This is Bronwyn Schwagert, licensed therapist and author at the Angry at the Right Things podcast. Instead of controlling our anger, we'll be looking at what causes it in the first place so we can rectify what's dysfunctional in our lives and in the world. Here we go. The right things, folks. Oh, we're supposed to look right there.
Oh, yes.
Okay, this is Bronwyn and Katie.
Hello.
And we're doing a video. For those of you who only hear the audio, you're welcome to go on YouTube and see us. Oh, Katie, come over here.
Yeah,
that's Katie. Isn't that's she cute? Me. She's my bestie. We are going to do, I'm excited to do the subject matter that we did last time on borderline personality disorder, part two today. And I'm super excited to share this. What inspired me to do a part two was, A, I felt like I had left some things out from part one, and I wanted to share those. And interestingly enough, right around the time we made our part one borderline personality disorder podcast, I actually was recommended to listen to one of my favorite podcasts called We Can Do Hard Things, which is the podcast done by Glennon Doyle, author of Untamed, who we love. And she has a fantastic podcast if you guys don't already subscribe to it. And I was recommended that I listen specifically to her interviews with a psychologist named Lindsay C. Gibson. And I did. I listened to both the interviews she had with Dr. Gibson. Dr. Gibson is the author of a book, actually a couple books, but one is called Adult Children of Emotionally Immature Parents. And I could not stop listening to these two interviews. I actually listened to them twice in a row, and I took notes the second time because I felt like Dr. Gibson and I were overlapping a lot. Dr. Gibson doesn't ever use the term borderline personality disorder. She just calls these people emotionally immature. So she just always uses that title. But I really don't think there's need for a distinction. So today I'm kind of going to coalesce some of what I have to say and my reflections on what she shared. And I'm just going to use the term BPD or borderline personality disorder, because they're really kind of one big monolith, what were the things that we're pointing out.
Okay.
Okay. So, by the way, if you want to listen to her interviews yourself, Dr. Gibson's interviews are on, again, We Can Do Hard Things, the name of Glennon Doyle's podcast. And they were published in early December 2023, and their podcast episode number 263 and 264, and they're excellent. Very much recommend them for any listener. And I just really appreciate Glennon Doyle, as well as her partner, Abby, and her sister, Amanda. So one thing I didn't share last time is that the BPD parent confuses her child, her adult child or her young child, for her own mother.
Okay. So, and I mean, could it be the father too?
Yes.
Or, okay.
Yes.
Kind of interchangeable.
But, you know, I'm pretty Freudian, so I'm going to go with the mother.
Mostly the mother.
Mostly the mother.
Okay.
The one who's supposed to nurture her.
Yes.
The most, yeah. And so the BPD parent expects and even demands nurture, maternal-like nurture from her child or her children, without any idea that it's actually her job as the biological mother to give the nurture to her child.
Hmm.
So if she does give any nurture, it in her mind puts that child in debt to her. Because in her backwards view of reality, it's the child's job to nurture her, to be her mother.
Right.
So what we need to understand is that the BPD or the emotionally immature parent both loves and hates this child that she confuses with her parent, because the actual parent did not give this BPD parent the nurture she needed. And so she's very resentful and very angry about that. But she also desperately longs and needs that nurture, longs for and needs the nurture. And she also hates how dependent and vulnerable it makes her feel on the adult child. So this can really explain a lot once the adult child becomes aware of this dynamic. So for example, I've had clients tell me, yeah, now that I'm putting these things together, it makes sense why my parent is always trying to impress me or win my approval and like show off to me, because they actually are confusing me with their mother, right? Or how the parent never calls to check on her adult child, but really expects that child to always initiate with her so her own existence can feel validated. Or how the parent only talks about herself, expecting the child to show attunement and empathy, but refuses to do that for the child.
Right.
Katie's still warming up to the video.
I am.
Peace, guys. And again, if you're listening on podcast, she is also being videoed. And so she's getting warmer. So once the adult child realizes this is happening, it starts to make sense. And they start to realize, oh my God, my parent actually doesn't know me at all, because they don't. The parent is confusing the child. The child who might be incredibly loyal and trustworthy and responsible with their own experience with their own parent who was not worthy of trust and who was in fact manipulative. So this is why oftentimes when the child, the adult child cries, a BPD parent will act like she's being manipulative, who won't really trust that the tears are real, and she won't show any empathy whatsoever. This is why the parent will accuse the child, who again might be very trustworthy and loyal and responsible, of being all kinds of horrible things that she really isn't and never would be, that just don't fit. Because the BPD parent will always mesh her experience of her mother who failed her with this child. And the BPD parent will never be able to unsee this. No amount of explaining, defending, convincing, or objective reality will penetrate the BPD parent's delusions.
Do you think that, you know, people will say that a parent sometimes sees the child as an extension of themselves?
Yeah.
Does that play into this?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely, which is why that child can't be fat,
right?
Or ugly,
or
not wear makeup in public,
or not successful,
or not successful, right? Because this child is not an individual,
right?
This child is an extension of the BPD parent or the emotionally immature parent.
Okay,
this is also why the adult child, when she has her own child and becomes very vulnerable and really in need of nurture, as anyone who's had a child knows, like when you have a baby, you really want a mommy right then and there. You want a grandma who's your mommy, because you need nurture. But they will find that their parent, their mother or father, is actually becoming more hostile in some insidious way. And sometimes this hostility is very behind the scenes. It's very ensconced, but sometimes it's pretty apparent. So it can depend. But what the adult child needs to understand is the BPD parent is actually jealous of the newcomer, the baby, who is her competition for attention and attunement and nurture. And so this can really show up. I personally see this now in retrospect with my father, because from day one, when my daughter was born 20 years ago, he was just like not remotely interested in her existence. I mean, literally from the time she was a baby.
Right. Like actively couldn't be bothered.
He would not even look at her or acknowledge her. And until just a few months ago, it was like she didn't exist. And the first time she started to exist to him was when I created my hard and fast boundaries with him. And he no longer has my attunement or my nurture. And so he started using her, who she's now 20, for her nurturing, empathetic listening ear.
Right.
So guys, this is really what the dynamic is. It's pretty bad. So the interviews with Dr. Gibson reiterated a lot of this, and I really want to repeat a couple of the things that she shared. And again, I hope everyone listens to her interviews on We Can Do Hard Things. So one thing she says is regarding how the adult child has like this delusional hope that if she just improves herself or her communication with this parent, that the parent will finally see her and understand her and acknowledge her. And like the parent's eyes will suddenly be open. And Dr. Gibson says, and I'm quoting her because I listened to it twice, guys. She says, if someone wants to understand you, it doesn't matter what you say. And if someone doesn't want to understand you, it doesn't matter what you say. In other words, the problem is not with the adult child, but with the BPD parent. And it's really essential that the adult child realizes that the parent doesn't want to understand them, and therefore they won't. It's not that they can't, it's that they won't. She goes on to say how this can become obvious when we view it from a more objective lens, as we realize the parent isn't actually responding to the things that the adult child is saying, but is instead kind of like derailing the conversations to somewhere else that I call a no man's land. And maybe you guys can relate to this. For example, the example that's given in the podcast with Dr. Gibson is the adult child tells her parent, you know, next time I visit, I'm going to stay in a hotel versus your house. And the parent does not actually respond to this actual statement, but now just brings like this kind of confusion and kind of derails it into some tangential thing in order to kind of manipulate the adult child to guilt or provoke them and away from reality. The conversation just took a you know, 90 degree left turn away from reality. And Dr. Gibson encourages us, if we want to continue having a relationship with the BPD parent, to just simply stand our ground, not allowing ourselves to be derailed into tangential no man's land, but to just repeat the original statement over and over calmly until the parent realizes that her tactics aren't working. And she gives the example of how you do this with a toddler, because that's really what who you're speaking to is an emotional toddler. Along these lines, I want to bring up a new acronym I learned recently. Maybe some of you guys are aware of this. I was not, and I love this acronym. It's very helpful. It's called DARVO, and it stands for deny, attack, and reverse victim and offender. So this is what happens with a lot of BPD folks, that when you confront them, no matter how kindly or gently or assertively or clearly, instead of responding, like instead of saying, oh, you want to stay in a hotel? Well, that kind of bums me out, but I can kind of see where you're coming from. Instead of responding to what you actually said, they now are denying something that you actually didn't say. And now they're attacking you because you said something that you actually didn't say, or it's implied. And all of a sudden, they are accusing you of attacking them. And now suddenly they're the victim and you're the offender. And all of a sudden you find yourself comforting or consoling them or reassuring them. So for example, when I say to my father, which I did say, Dad, it hurts my feelings when you hang up on me. And he responds with, well, I guess I'm just a horrible father. And so if he succeeds, which I think he did the first time he pulled this, I found myself now, instead of, you know, getting my message across, all I found is that I'm comforting him, saying, no, you're not a horrible father. And voila, I was derailed from what I originally tried to communicate. And now he's being reassured and consoled by me. So it's right. Like this magic trick that we need to really see.
And he didn't have to acknowledge.
It was like
you said, or what you were trying to convey.
What I tried to say, like that was part of the magic act, was like, now you see it. Now you don't. Mm-hmm. Now you're somewhere else entirely. Mm-hmm. And how did we get here? So I love that. That's Darvo.
Okay. That. Yes.
So Dr. Gibson discusses how it is imperative that we trust ourselves and stay grounded in reality and not abandon ourselves in order to do this. And again, this isn't just for a BPD parent or an emotionally immature parent. It's for any person that fits this bill. And she likens the new relationship to that person as us being kind of like taking on the role of like an anthropologist. So just being curious and kind of objectively reflecting on that person internally, like, that's a really interesting way to respond to the fact that I'm going to stay in a hotel. It sounds like this people group is trying to communicate that they don't like that by taking the conversation to a whole nother place. And I'm going to stay right here in reality and just repeat that my decision is to stay in a hotel until it's acknowledged. So when we do start to see the BPD parent with new eyes, and Dr. Gibson jokes, what we're doing is we're un-godding the parent. We're taking the parent off the God throne, and we finally see them for who they are, which is a toddler trapped in an adult body. It just reminds me of the Wizard of Oz. You know, like the wizard, when you finally see him after he, you know, is caught behind the curtain. He's just this little kind of pathetic man.
Right.
I really feel like that's about our parents, the Wizard of Oz.
I think you're right.
Anyway, she discusses something she calls a healing fantasy. Dr. Gibson calls a healing fantasy in which the adult child holds out hope the parent might finally see them, approve of them, and that the relationship will magically heal. And this hope, you guys, this hope is deadly. And I loved how Glennon Doyle says in that podcast, she says, she quotes, Dante's Inferno that says, "Abandon hope, all ye who enter." I love that. Abandon hope, all ye who enter. Because that hope is going to keep you blind. It's going to make you blind. With that hope, you will be blind. As soon as you're able to let go of the hope, you can see that person, that parent, for who they really are. And that's the truth. That's the objective reality. And, you know, truth sets us free. And I can't think of a time this statement would be more helpful, that the truth will set you free. So I want to share something specific for our listeners who are raised with a faith that really wants to abide by the notion of honoring your mother and your father. Now, this is a noble desire, but it can also be very manipulatively used by churches, parents, and religious folks. And as a therapist, I see firsthand how much damage that this notion of honoring your mother and your father at all costs does to the adult children. So I want to really take a minute to think about what this commandment actually means in the context of actual scripture, because I am a person of faith of the Judeo-Christian tradition. So let's look at this, because if we look at the entire message of the Bible, I think it's very apparent that the human vocation is to be the image of God. Our job is to really image, and I'm using that word image as a verb, our job is to image God well. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yes.
And so if we do our job well by, you know, by showing kindness and compassion and behaving in ways that are just and good, even at high cost to our own comfort, then we are imaging God well. And parents, I say this now as a therapist, parents are a child's first image of God, whether anyone talks about it or not, because all children view their parents as God. Now, if that parent truly embodies God or is a good image of God as a parent figure, as they are called to do, then the commandment of honoring your parents would not be difficult, and it would never be potentially dangerous to the mental or emotional health of the child. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it would be in their best interest, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It would be in the child's best interest to always honor their father and mother. But how often does that happen where the parent right. images God
right.
well? And this doesn't mean that the parent has to be perfect, because that doesn't happen. That's not even possible. But it does say in the New Testament in Ephesians chapter 6, parents are warned, do not exasperate your children, which means to provoke them to anger unnecessarily. And that's in there for a reason, because a lot of parents do that. The other thing I want to say is, let's look at the example of Jesus, okay? Because he actually pulled kind of a crazy move at age 12 where he went rogue on his parents. And if you guys know the story, he intentionally stayed behind at the Jerusalem temple during their pilgrimage to Jerusalem for the Passover when he was 12 years old. He stayed for 3 days without his parents even knowing he wasn't journeying home on pilgrimage with them. And he did this intentionally. He didn't let them know ahead of time he was going to do this. And when his parents confront him, when they finally find him and they confront him and they say, son, you scared us to death, he does not apologize. He actually is very assertive. And he says, what'd you expect, kind of thing? Like, why wouldn't I be here? You should know that about me. But the next verse, this is all in Luke chapter 2, I'm pulling this out of, scripture goes on to say that he was then obedient to his parents. So I think Jesus models for us a mixture of obedience and healthy subversion of parental expectations, as is fitting for the situation. And guys, he was only 12 when he pulled that. Finally, as an adult, he pulls another crazy move in a shame and honor culture where he is out teaching, and he is told that his mother and brothers like drop by for a visit. And the conventional thing would have been at that time would have been to get up and go see his family immediately, because that's what you do in a shame and honor culture. And he didn't do that. In fact, he asked this rhetorical question, who are my mother and brothers and sisters? Those who do the will of God. So what he did, I think a lot of us really don't understand the gravity of how shameful that would have been in his culture at that time to actually ignore his family's visit and instead identify himself and his family as those around him who obey him. And what he did models a new and unconventional type of family, one that is far more expansive than bloodlines, but really is based on the heart, the condition of the heart that makes you family. So one thing that Dr. Gibson does not broach in her interview, which I think is really pertinent, and I see this as a therapist all the time, is how common it is for those of us who have BPD parents or emotionally immature parents to marry spouses who are also BPD or emotionally immature. And I find this is more common, unfortunately, than not, due to what I call repetition compulsion, and that's a Freudian term. And I talk about this at length in a previous podcast, the podcast called The Truth About Love, Hate, and Freedom. But basically what is happening is that adult child is kind of repeating, trying to finally win their parents' love and approval by marrying a parent type figure, someone who is like a fill-in for the parent. Does that make sense?
That's really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So what I find when I have a client like this is that it's really easy for them to see the BPD symptoms in their spouse, because it's easy to divorce a spouse. But then their eyes, once your eyes are opened, you see it everywhere. Really, you see it everywhere. And they start to see it with their parents. And it's a lot harder to divorce your parents, as you know. And especially if that's going to make you feel very isolated. And you're already feeling isolated because you're already leaving a spouse. So I just really want to encourage people that that is very common, and it can be very overwhelming. But what we have to unlearn as an adult child of a BPD is that it's not us, it's a them problem. That we are not inherently shameful or bad, and our feelings, our needs, and our limitations matter just as much as anyone else's. We have to finally develop a relationship with ourself, which is a beautiful and essential thing, because we never learned that we matter. And we do.
Right.
One of the things I found most true in Dr. Gibson's interview was not said explicitly, but it kind of was said implied, and I want to kind of just flesh it out a little bit. Glennon asked her at kind of near the end, she said, you know, I've been personally in therapy for decades, and I'm just wondering if we are going to like extricate ourselves from this kind of emotionally immature parent. Do we first have to get whole by doing therapy for decades, you know, basically? And Dr. Gibson's response was, in effect, no, because the actual act of separating from sick people is how a huge part of how we become whole. We actually become more whole in that act of separation, little by little, by not betraying ourselves and trusting ourselves and standing up for ourselves and advocating for ourselves. And I could not agree with this conclusion more. I believe this is 100% true and very encouraging. I see this in so many clients, how whole they become when they start to extricate themselves from these sick people in their lives. And I firsthand have experienced this. I'm now 53 years old, and I have never felt in my life more alive, more animated, more joyful, more energetic. I've never slept better until very recently. And it's been very recently that I've actually created this hard and fast boundary with my own father, realizing just how sick he is. So guys, I just really want to encourage you. Wholeness is something that can actually be achieved. It's not, you know, a mirage. It's really not. And then finally, the last thing I want to communicate is that, you know, going back to honoring our parents, I think the best way that we can honor our parents is to flourish in our own lives. Because if our parents were healthy, that would be what would honor them the most. They would want their children to flourish at all costs, because that is what a healthy parent wants for their child. And so we can honor our parents in spite of their own dysfunction by flourishing, because we can honor the healthy part of them that we may never see and most likely will never see realized, but we can believe that that potential is there and we can flourish as a response to that. So again, we do this by no longer parenting ourselves the way we were parented by them. But instead, we learn to self-attune to our own feelings, our own needs, our own limitations. We learn to respect those things, to attune to them, that they're important, that they matter. And we treat ourselves like we matter, because it's true. And by doing so, we honor the healthy parents that we never had by becoming those to ourselves.
Right. Right. I have a thought.
Yeah.
I was thinking, I had this experience over the holidays about a relative who showed displeasure with one of my children not thanking them properly for a Christmas gift. Mm-hmm. Yes. And it got me really thinking about emotionally immature people.
Yeah.
And while bipolar,
BPD, borderline personality disorder.
Thank you. Borderline personality disorder. Thinking about that, that term sounds so big and heavy and scary. Mm-hmm. But the more I learn about it from you, and then I see that, as you showed, that emotionally immature parents are one and the same.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing that everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm seeing it in my own life. And I'm thinking about how in a past episode we talked about what a parent's job is. Mm-hmm. And how I always think of gifts, like to me, a gift is only a gift when it's freely given.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be, there should be no strings attached. Not to say you shouldn't thank someone for a gift.
Yeah.
Obviously you should.
Yeah.
But that takes away the beauty of the gift when there's expectations tied to it.
Yeah.
Whether we're talking about an actual physical gift or any gift of yourself to someone.
Yeah.
But it got me thinking about parenting and how, in my mind, a good, loving parent gives their love freely to their child, right?
Mm-hmm.
Without anything expected in return.
They are not
to expect anything in return.
Yes.
And the BPD parent expects a great deal in return, right?
It
is transactional.
Yes.
And how opposite of healthy that is. And like how we talked about that the parents, the place of the parent is to be the safe place for the child, right?
Mm-hmm.
To be free and held.
Mm-hmm.
The safe but solid place that the child can become.
Yes, and the term to be free and held, again, comes from Glennon Doyle.
Right,
in her book, Untamed.
To
be free and held at the same time.
And how the BPD parent or the emotionally immature parent does not play by that.
No.
And like you said, no parent is perfect, but how opposite that is, and seeing that unhealthiness in my relationships with my own family members, being able to separate myself from that has been really helpful for me and made me feel closer to being whole. Definitely.
Wow.
Yeah.
Made you feel closer to being whole by seeing it.
Just seeing it. Seeing that dynamic and how unhealthy that is, and feeling anger towards those parental figures in my life that have made me feel that way and made me feel guilt and made me feel responsible for their feelings that I am not responsible for. Because they aren't healthy people.
Okay.
They are emotionally immature people.
Okay. So what you're saying, first, you're saying a lot right now. And it makes me think about the podcast that I did on motherhood.
Okay.
And guys, if you want to hear more about what good motherhood looks like, what's mine called? True Nurture.
Yeah.
I think it's called True Nurture. Motherhood, if you do it right, it is giving and giving and not receiving. And if you receive anything, it's just pure joy from the giving, and maybe a reflection when your child, if they should have children, finally say, "Hey, mom, thanks for how you did it."
Yeah.
If that happens, but there's no guarantees. But you're kind of hitting on that it is a act of selfless giving. That doesn't mean you don't have boundaries with your child.
No.
But it is selfless. It's not a tit for tat. It's not transactional.
Right, because you don't need from your child. The parent is
your
not to
job
be...
as a parent is to get your needs met at the adult level.
Yes.
And not inflict them on your children. So that's, you're saying that, but you're saying you're not seeing that in these relatives.
Right.
And by just noticing that, and it makes you angry because now you recognize it. And
yes.
Now you're like,
No.
That's not okay, actually. Mm-hmm. So I love that, because what you're saying is just, you're saying you're feeling more whole by seeing it, but also by feeling angry. And guys, yeah. this is why my podcast is called Angry at the Right Things, because that anger, that like indignant, healthy, righteous anger is how we become whole, because we need that anger. That anger says, that's not right. It doesn't mean we're going to lash out at that person, but
no.
But the anger itself helps us to separate from that, just even mentally and emotionally. It causes us to separate from the source, and that is that separation that's making us more whole.
Yeah.
Even if we say nothing, just what you're talking about is becoming more whole. So I appreciate you sharing that.
Right.
That's very true.
Yeah. So that's what I was thinking about. Yeah.
Oh, I appreciate you
yeah.
sharing that. So it works, guys. Katie's here because it works.
Yeah.
She's the stand-in for all you guys, the listeners. And I know a lot of you listeners appreciate her. So, and she even puts herself on video. For this, for you guys. So I hope you really appreciate her. And I hope you all feel very guilty right now. No, I'm kidding. I am Jewish, so I'm good at that. But okay, well, good. I feel like we said a lot again. And thanks for doing this with me, Katie. And happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year.
Don't forget to be angry at the right things. All right, bye.